Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Guys, it's Wednesday, May 22nd, and we are living on the cusp of a unified Reich. It's fantastic. I can't wait. It's the disparate Reichs. You don't want them. You want all the Reichs together.
Can somebody clue me in? This is like one of those stories that I just opted out of. Like, it sounded stupid and like probably an intern made a mistake or something. But like, what? Tell me what happened.
All right. Tim, do you want to do the plot summary?
You do the plot summary because I've got a riff. I'm mentally churning on a riff right now. So you do the plot summary while I get riled up.
Some Trump super fan on Twitter put together a video ad homage worshipful package for Trump. It has a bunch of stuff floating, words and text and headlines floating in the background. Trump goes and retweets this from his Truth Social account, at which point somebody paying attention was like, does that say unified Reich behind what?
And the headlines are things that would happen in another Trump term. You know, it's like economy great, 15 million illegals deported. And yeah,
so this then the Trump people say, well, Donald Trump didn't do that. Somebody else who runs that account did that. So I guess that if something bad happens on your social account, you're no longer held accountable for it. That's good to know. And
Dave Weigel would like a word.
And the fellow who made the meme said, no, that was just like, you know, placeholder words in a template that I pulled off the shelf to make the, there's no Nazi stuff going on in here. Don't pay attention to the fact that the guy who had dinner with a Nazi, Nick Fuentes, and who said he wants to be a dictator and has said that he would likely terminate parts of the Constitution. And look, don't go saying that this is Nazi stuff because this is just an accidental slip and we all have to not pay any attention to it. Don't pay any attention to it. Don't stoop to their level.
Yeah. JVL, you also missed one key plot point that was just released in The Bulwark this morning, thanks to Intrepid Reporter and Magaville.
It was the human printer's fault, probably.
Yeah, Mark Caputo. Mark Caputo sources say that it was the human printer. Have you read the human printer story yet, Sarah?
No.
It's so good. Trump has a human printer.
Yeah.
It's a lady.
She does happen to be pretty.
I'm sure, you know, she does happen to be pretty. Pretty younger lady. It now travels with him and carries a massive bag that includes...
With a battery-powered printer. It's a battery-powered printer. So she finds things on the interwebs that Donald Trump would like to see, like flattering things about him and things about how the election was stolen, and just prints them out and then hands them to him. If this was in
Veep, to cheer him up while he's in court?
All the time, just cheering, stimulated, right?
But also for the press conferences. So, like, when you see him at the press conferences, like holding up paper, and it's like, Buck Sexton said that Donald Trump gave the best defense in history, and like Greg Gutfeld wrote, like, that's the human printer is printing out those tweets for him. So anyway, supposedly the human printer now, in addition to Scavino, the golf caddy, has access to the former president's account where he puts out proclamations, which is also not a problem at all, by the way. No worries, you know,
totally fine.
A random person that used to be an OAN anchor.
She went to Liberty University and was an anchor on OANN. OANN? 2N? Yeah. I forget what we...
Yeah, so
we
got
I just have a quick point of order. Yeah. Can he not see his phone any longer? Why do we need the printouts?
The eyes.
Caputo
also put this. Yeah, like it strains his eyes. It strains his eyes.
Be careful.
So old man with eye strain.
Sleepy Don can't even read his own phone anymore.
I think it's a little bit underappreciated. Like, it's a little concerning that somebody that could cause international incidents, like just hands over, you know, just kind of carte blanche ability to re-bleat things to a former golf caddy and a former OAN anchor who doubles as a human printer. Those are some things that are concerning. I got something though. There was a discussion about this. There was some discussion in the Bork Slack and elsewhere. Is this a big deal? Was he referencing the 1871 Reich? Apparently, there's some discussion that it was the First Reich.
The First Reich was fine.
I don't know that the First Reich was woke. Okay, I don't know, but it wasn't the Third Reich.
There's been a really great Reich. I think some Reichs were worse than others.
I think it was a fine Reich. It reminds me of when I was doing my brother's wedding. It was in the city of Raleigh, and I was quoting Sir Walter Raleigh because it was Raleigh. I felt that was on brand. And a judge that my brother's husband had worked for, older black guy, comes up to me. He's like, you did a great job. Great job. One note, though, that Sir Walter Raleigh was a damn bastard, you know? And I'm like, well, if you're quoting anybody from, you know, the 1700, that, you know, that period, it's like, you know, they're not fully up on the modern mores of the day. So I, you know, I think the First Reich probably had its own issues. Here's the thing, though. Like, he just gets created on such a curve. Like, there's no other example, right? It's like, what would be a Biden version of this, right? That, like, the Biden has a pretty person that he decided he wants to have around him all the time. Okay.
Which everybody's totally, you know, cool with. Everybody's nobody totally insinuates cool with. Anything.
Then he gives that person control of the POTUS Twitter account. Then that person retweets, you know, like, From the River to the Sea 240, who, like, did a video that has, like, that has a bunch of normal stuff that's like, Joe Biden's great, Joe Biden did infrastructure, Joe Biden did chips, and then, like, in like, fine print, you know, it's like, globalize the intifada. And then everybody gets, it's like, would anybody be like, well, I mean, they were talking about the good intifadas. They were just talking, about raising
about
awareness.
Spiritual intifada?
Yeah.
The intifada that goes, like, on Joe, inside each and every one of us.
Yeah, Joe Biden wasn't real. He wasn't talking about, like, the Jew-killing intifada. It was just, it was one of the other intifadas. Like, you know, like, I just, like, this whole thing, like, if you're running for the president of the fucking United States, you need to be relatively careful with the words that come out of your mouth and come out of your social media feeds. This was like a standard belief that
Speaking
everybody
Speaking of antiquated
had.
Beliefs.
Yeah, well, everybody believed this in the media, on in the right, on the left, going from my birth to 2012. You know, you just have to have some responsibility for things that go out under your name because words matter and the results and things matter. And so it's like, if you are running for president and you have a vulnerability in that some people think you're a Nazi because you had lunch with a Nazi and, you know, you have several people around you that have Nazi sympathies and people keep getting fired because they posted
and the actual Nazis all really like you and talk about how they're really going to vote for you.
Yeah, you should. And one time you talked about how there were very fine people at a Nazi rally. Like that. Like, if you have that baggage, you should be sensitive to the word Reich showing up in the videos. And, like, even if it wasn't intentional, it's kind of like, that doesn't really matter, right? Like we don't need to, you know, parse whether that, like, that is just something that a responsible presidential campaign shouldn't do. And if you do it, you should get criticized for it. Doesn't mean that he's planning a Third Reich. And I think if you extrapolate that to be like gas chambers are coming, that's overstating it.
Well,
but it is certainly,
he has said he wants to set up camps for 15 million immigrants.
And that's in this ad, by the way. Also in the same ad, it's like, and that is in the bold.
Don't go accusing us of being Nazis. We just want to set up camps to intern people who we don't like because they're vermin.
That wasn't in the kind of light font. In the bold font, it was 15 million people deported. What do we think that looks like? Do you think you're not doing that with trains and buses? Like, how are we deporting all these people? Like, do we think that's going to be clean? So anyway, it's a fuck up. Reich, you're not supposed to don't do that. Don't post about Reichs. You know, when I was running Jeb's campaign approving things, if I'd accidentally let something slip by that had a Reich, I think my response would have been, I'm resigning. Not like I was referring to the First Reich. Anyway, it's just an error.
Sarah,
an error.
Where are you on this? Because I have a comms question for you, but I want to hear your political opinion first.
You know, I don't want to step on something that I'd like to talk about later, but I am going to just bring up Mark Robinson, who's the guy running for governor in North Carolina. He's the Republican nominee who won with 65% of the vote. And he's, though, having a tough time with the swing voters. And the reason is that he is a Holocaust denier. Now, he also called gay people filth. And also called the...
Was it kind of like a compliment? Like, you're so filthy. Like, that's a filthy outfit, queen.
No. That's not how it came out. Oh. He also called the Parkland kids prostitutes after the shooting.
So he has some extreme views, as the New York Times would say.
He does have some extreme views. But here's the thing that I find remarkable is how much Nazi discourse there has been since Donald Trump came on the scene. We didn't used to have this. And when you say, like, well, what is the political, I think you might, I'm not sure, short of Donald Trump being, though, an outright Holocaust denier, I'm not sure he gets tagged with this, to Tim's point about grading on the curve, because he's already done, I mean, the Kanye West, Nick Fuentes thing, That happened during a low point in Trump's campaign, you may recall. He was coming off of 22. I believe he had announced by that point, but like people weren't that excited about it. He wasn't getting, you know, so it's a little low time. But he went and had dinner with them. Nick Fuentes is not one of these people where you're like, oh, I didn't know that he was a white supremacist. Like, that's his MO. That's what he does.
Yeah. That's his brand.
And also the interchangeability between the new and not just Trump. It was DeSantis, too, had this problem, right? Mm-hmm. The interchangeability between these weird mini-Nazi staffs who are now populating Republican campaigns and, like, the anti-campaigns or the external efforts that then get retweeted because they're sort of on the inside. They got a lot of these white supremacist Nick Fuentes types in them. And that's a problem, and it feels like it should be an extra problem at the time of Republicans going on offense against Democrats and progressives for the college campus kids stuff on Israel, right? And the River to the Sea and the Rashida Tlaib. Feels like the penalty is happening to the Democrats for the people who just last night we saw Jayapal's sister, her pro-Palestinian sister, get crushed by a pro-Israel Democrat. And so it's both the asymmetry of accountability that we see all the time. It's Trump being graded on a curve, and it's the infiltration of these Republican campaigns with these little fascists that is now like a fait accompli or like something people accept.
Can I say something about the little fascists?
Yeah.
Because I do think this is important, and it's lost. So like it turned out the DeSantis, the weird DeSantis had with the son in Riot, ended up being like somebody literally on his staff, Nate Hockman. But the initial thought was that it came from like there's a little text chain. Like you're kind of referencing this, Sarah, about like these meme creators that are on the outside.
Yes.
And it's like, there's one way to look at it, which is that the campaign is totally irresponsible. They've got a golf caddy running the Twitter feed and he's just retweeting whatever random shit he sees. And that's a problem in its own right, I would say, you know? But then there is even a more nefarious element of this, which is what was happening on the DeSantis campaign, which is there was like a text chain. Or like a WhatsApp chain or something between like these creators and the staff, you know, where they were like flagging things for them that were made. And I guess in the Hockman scenario, he kind of like pretended like it was an outside person and was sent and that was sending it to the other DeSantis staffers. Anyway, the details not really worth getting into on that. But the point is about the closeness of this. It has not sunk in with regular people yet. Like just how few degrees of separation there are from these online shitposting Nazis, whether they're literal Nazis in some cases or trolling pretend Nazis who kind of like the Nazi stuff, but are just pretending like they're trolling about it. Like, to me, that's a distinction without a difference. But those people are now working on these campaigns, or if they're not, they're like 1 degree separation from the people working on these campaigns. And that is like very different from what is happening on the left, right? Like the people on the Biden campaign hate the far left people that are doing this. They're making their lives miserable. And so there may be some exceptions to this in like administration, you know, kind of deputy Department of State type, you know, administrative roles. But on the campaign side, the people that are close to the candidate, it's much fewer degrees of separation from the little Nazis to the Republican candidates. And yet I just, for whatever reason, that has not sunk in among people who are not hyper engaged in politics.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, our friend Nicholas Grossman yesterday wrote, he said, I'm paraphrasing here. He said, do you know what we called Germans in 1937 who didn't really love the whole Nazi program? They just hated the commies or who were really just interested in the foreign policy aspects of Nazism or who were really concerned about the economy and making sure that Germany rebuilt its industrial base. We called them Nazis. like if they were in for like, you know, 10% of the program, but they didn't like they were all still Nazis. Here's what I want to ask, Sarah. So I don't want to betray any confidences. We had a little intra-family discussion about this last night. And one of our colleagues said to me, he said, you know, it's just bad that Biden would try to make hay out of this because it's not really on the level. And
did Biden try to make hay out of this? Didn't he just say like that's bad?
No, he cut an ad. And the argument was like, you know, this is how you get Trump. It's boy cries wolf. You do these things when you don't really have him dead to rights, like with the bloodbath.
I think this is different from bloodbath.
Hold on, let me ask. So that is one theory of communications, right? Is that you can't be the boy who cries wolf. You can't. But that's not the Trump theory of communications. The Trump theory of communications is you repeat the craziest shit over and over and over and over again, and eventually people start to believe it. They start to believe that actually Joe Biden wants to defund the police, which he doesn't. That's not on the level, but Trump says it all the time, so people believe it. You say things like the economy is in the toilet when it's not true. That's boy who cries wolf. Do you see what I'm saying? Like there's this weird, like, yeah. Why is it that Democrats should not try to use political weapons when they are given to them by their opponents to create a shared reality among voters? And that's somehow, because that's judged ineffectual and bad for their cause, but that's the entire mode of operation of Trump world and Republicans.
Well, it's not just ineffectual. I don't think that's right. And the question is whether or not you think that it is morally and ethically important to be tethered to the truth. And the Trump people don't. And that is one of the reasons we think that they are unfit to govern this country. And so I'm not saying Biden has to play perfect baseball, but I do think that they should be tethered to the truth. And I think that because of the way that it is a broad perception, true or not, that Trump is treated unfairly, taken out of context, and the media overdoes it, everything's overblown, the curve that Trump gets graded on is largely because voters, including these swingier voters, have internalized a sense of people blow everything Trump says out of proportion, and that it's caused them to dismiss things when they are really bad. Like, it's a phenomenon we're seeing. And so here's the thing. I think, though, like, Trump should be held accountable for retweeting something with Unified Reich in it, or like, that's fine. That's a true thing that happened. The bloodbath thing was wrong. It was taken out of context. And so, like, for me, that was the problem, was like, not just boy who cried wolf. The problem for me was like, this is not tethered to the truth, and we shouldn't do that.
Can I just float something on this? Because it's something I've just really been thinking about. And Sarah, I'm really interested in your perspective, because you might, you know, the focus groups might give you a little bit more of a read. But like, some of this stuff is just like, we're all gnashing our teeth over it. And it's like, most people, this is just washing over them.
Totally.
Like, most people don't even know what the Reich video is. Like, the idea that there's somebody out there that's like, well, I was going to vote for Joe Biden, but I was offended that somebody overstated 100%. The Reich. Like, now I'm going to vote for Trump. Like, these people don't exist. But who might exist? And this is the question. This is bad Tim coming in, all right? This is my darker impulses, my old oppo Tim coming in. Might it be true that some of these people that we're struggling with, who are low information voters, who are younger maybe, who don't follow this stuff day to day, they might not know anything about this controversy, what the video was, whether it was legit, whether it was not legit, but they saw one TikTok flash across their screen that was like, Trump did a video about bringing back the Reich. And they're like, ooh, that's kind of scary. Maybe I should be a little more scared about Donald Trump than I am. Like, isn't that the only even potential outcome of this, positive or negative? If you're taking the morals and ethics aside, you're just looking at like, what is the impact of people discussing Trump doing a Reich video? Like, to me, it's either like there's no impact, or maybe you reach some people who don't actually follow the news and they see one TikTok.
Well, hold on a second, though. I'm not against going hard.
I know.
No, but just if you want to cut a TikTok ad that says Trump has been dancing with anti-Semites his whole thing, and throw it on the pile of very fine people on both sides dining with Nick Fuentes, you know, vowed white supremacist. You know, you want to do that? You should do that. In fact, why aren't we doing more of that? We should. I think the question is like, and I'm separating the Reich from bloodbath. Trump has had so many comments about political violence. Say that he calls for political violence. Don't use a situation where that's not what he was actually doing. Use all the evidence that we have that's true. I'm not saying don't put a knife in your teeth and go as hard as you can and call this guy out. I'm saying we should do that. I'm saying it's a mistake when you are doing that and you give them a hammer to hit you with in response.
I don't disagree with that. To me, my blind spot is like, who is this even hit, right? Like, I guess what I'm trying to distinguish is this all just like a conversation between political hobbyists on both sides, or is this actually seeping down to anybody that matters?
Let me tell you what this is, Tim. This is a conversation created by people who are going to eventually back Trump and who are spending a great deal of emotional energy trying to find ways to publicly rationalize it. That's what this is.
So I think the Reich stuff is probably a hobbyist thing, because it's like, it's kind of a, it's in the scheme of Trump's pro-white supremacist things, it's actually kind of a minor one. It's like a little guy reminding us. It's like a weird text thing. Also, I love, as I've thought about this, I love saying, no, it was the First Reich, because the thing about people not really paying attention is they're like, oh, yeah, sure, makes sense. Like, the extent to which that just, like, you know, they're looking for whatever rationalization you got, and they'll just take the one Reich. Like, and so, like, their team knows that'll work for our guys. That'll be fine. Like, they don't know anything about the First Reich. I don't either. That was, oh, no, that was the great, that was the good Reich.
Who was in the First Reich? We need Bill Kristol for the next level. Can we call in Bill Kristol?
Here we go. What's that? Actually, the First
Reich. Otto von Bismarck? I think it was before. Was
Otto von Bismarck. Reinhold Niebuhr wrote about him.
Anyway, go hard. Call Trump out for his white supremacist stuff. This can be a little tickler to get you to have that bigger conversation. And they should go hard. Why aren't? And look, this is part of my broader, again, Democrats, if you're listening, the double haters are your problem. You need people to hate Trump more. You do have to go hard. Just make sure they're true so that they can't make you look foolish when you do it.
The Holy Roman Empire was the First Reich, actually. So, I mean, he was just talking about being Christian.
There's a lot of, in like Claremont world, there is a lot of lusting after Holy Roman Empire stuff.
There you go.
Like Bronze Age pervert and all those guys, they're super into that. Amazingly enough, the Unified Reich is not even the weirdest crazy Republican thing of the last 48 hours. We'll get to the rest of it in a minute. So late yesterday, Julie Kelly. Boy, you guys remember that? Remember that name, Julie Kelly?
I blocked her on Twitter, so I haven't seen much from her.
Big fan of The Bulwark, Julie Kelly. Big reader of The Bulwark, actually. Monitors us very closely.
She unearthed a bombshell.
Oh, excited. She's still writing for American Greatness, or she got pushed off to kind of a down market American Greatness?
I don't know where she is anymore. Mm.
There's always something new down market.
She might be just on Twitter. But she broke the news that Biden's DOJ and FBI had a plot to assassinate Donald Trump. And this went from her Twitter to Marjorie Taylor Greene's Twitter to Donald Trump's Truth Social. Although, who knows? Maybe it was Natalie.
The human printer.
You know, the human printer who... You could never say who's doing what from Trump's personal account.
Paul Gosar also was hitting on
So this is Andrew Egger, our colleague, unpacked all of this in his newsletter this morning, which if you're not subscribed to, you should go subscribe to Morning Shots with Andrew Egger. And it's the most specious piece of bullshit maybe of the last like 6 months, which is a heavy lift, whatever you want to say. Sarah, can you talk to me about this?
I didn't know it originated with Julie Kelly. Now that I know that, it makes so much more sense.
Sure.
But this is a fun one, I think, for us, because it's nice and preposterous. It is the normal way everything is handled. I probably need somebody else who's read it more closely to give like the blow-by-blow of why the FBI, whenever they're going in somewhere, always includes the ability to use lethal force as just like a general matter of how they comport themselves and how they do their like rule following things.
So I know this actually. Okay. It's all about illuminating and highlighting for the law enforcement where they can't use lethal force. So this is why these things are part of warrants, basically to beat the cops, whoever they are. In this case, it's the FBI. To beat the LEOs over the head with, you can't shoot when you go in to execute this warrant. You can't shoot people dead if they do X, Y, Z, and A, B, and C. So that's why it is.
So that was pulled. That protocol, right, was pulled out by Julie Kelly now. I've now realized, and again, that makes so much sense, and turned into they were going to use lethal force on Donald Trump when they went into Mar-a-Lago, which then turned into it was an assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life by Joe Biden
and Melania and possibly even Barron.
Can you believe it?
And here's the deal. So we were just talking about, you know, what will the low information? I am telling you, this is going to become part of MAGA lore. So, you know,
this is good stuff for Q. Now, we haven't heard much from Q lately.
A month from now, Jordan Klepper will be talking to somebody online at a Trump rally, and they're just going to sort of take it as read. Yeah, you know, Joe Biden tried to have Trump assassinated. And this is happening mere weeks after Donald Trump's lawyers made the case to the Supreme Court that it is perfectly proper for a president to assassinate a political rival. This is like, I just, their ability to have everything every way and have the voters just like nod along. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
I don't really understand this deep state plot, I got to say. I mean, if they're going to assassinate Trump, would they have needed to do it and in a way where they're putting it in the documents, they're sending a team down? You know, couldn't we have just done the Putin push him out the window thing? It just is a very low
paperwork
view of our deep state.
You always got to do paperwork, right? Even the deep state does paperwork.
Even the deep state does paperwork.
I should say for the record, the FBI intentionally executed this warrant when Trump was not at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Specifically to avoid any sort of altercation with Secret Service.
Yeah. I want to add a couple other things that are interesting in this case. I was happy that the FBI issued a statement about this. They said the FBI followed standard protocol in this search, as we do for all search warrants, which includes a standard policy statement limiting to the use of deadly force. No one ordered additional steps to be taken. I think that this was something I was talking about with Comey today and with Ben Wittes. This is a big theme of my day. Like, people need to act different. Like, institutions need to act differently around Trump now. Like, and I know that it would never be SOP to even do a statement about things like this. Like, there's random false rumors about the FBI all the time. Yeah. You can't debunk everything. Unfortunately, Donald Trump's put everybody in this situation. Like, the FBI should probably be doing TikToks about this too. It probably shouldn't just be written statements. Like, really, like, our institutions need to be more aggressive at defending their integrity against these lies. And so it's a baby step, but I'm glad that the FBI said something. The other thing is, like, this is preposterous, our favorite word. It's also serious. Again, we go back to the January 6th thing. I go to that period between the election and January 6th, and it was always like, what do you expect people are going to do? You know, if you tell them that the country's being stolen from them, that they voted one guy in, that, you know, that these nefarious forces took it away from him and you, and now someone's going to come in that's going to take away everything you hold dear. What do you think some people are going to do? They're going to be like, no, fuck this. I'm going to take it back. What do you think people are going to do if they think that the Biden regime that is illegitimate tried to kill Donald Trump? That's enough to send a couple people over the edge, I think. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a domestic terror expert.
It's a good point.
You know, all this stuff is like serious.
And this isn't just Julie Kelly. Like, it's now come from Trump's mouth.
Yeah, multiple people.
The guy who is the Republican nominee has alleged that his opponent attempted to assassinate him.
Yes.
So, like, are we supposed to take this seriously? Are we supposed to take it literally? Like, what is... Because there has to be some sort of response to this, right? Like, because otherwise, like, what, he just gets to say it and everybody else moves on and says, well, he tweets lots of things, right? Like, how?
Is
Trump going to get on a debate stage with Joe Biden? Why would he do that, knowing that Biden and the Secret Service might have him shot dead right there? This is
only a very small comment, which is, this is where Charlie's formulation, which I always thought was one of his best, where it was like the clown with a flamethrower still has a flamethrower, has always sticks in circumstances like this, where it's like, we as a society have struggled to deal with the absurdity of Trump, right? Because you want to be like, well, this is an insane thing. So, like, we don't want to dignify it with an answer, or you don't want to respond. But, like, at some point you have to recognize this is the Republican nominee for president who has a slightly better than 50% chance of winning and being the next president. And so it is deeply important that our institutions are able to have a mechanism to respond and say, no, nobody tried to assassinate him. And this is where the loss of shame on the Republican side, and this is deeply asymmetric to the point earlier about where, like, we will do a whole segment, right, sort of breaking down the truth and the veracity of the insane thing that Republicans did and how much attention do we pay to it, whereas, like, they're going to take the standard protocol, turn it into an assassination attempt, and blow it up. And they're going to do that before we've even...
And it'll help them.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt them, Sarah.
That's true.
Yeah. Nobody seems to have any problems with it either. You know, it's not like none of the closet normals, or there are no closet normals that are like, you know, hey, it wasn't like, let's be real. We need to have respect for the office of the presidency. Remember that whole thing? We need to be nice to, you had to respect the office of the presidency. And like, let's just be real here. The president did not try to assassinate Donald Trump. Like, you don't get that.
7 years ago, the three of us would have had this conversation and we would have been outraged. And we would have said, every single Republican in Congress should be asked, did Joe Biden attempt to assassinate Donald Trump? And right. And now we wouldn't even bother because A, we know how they'd respond. And B, we know that nobody would care. Nobody would care. So what is the answer? What is the answer when nobody cares? Well, I guess we'll wait for that for the next segment. So, you know, we've got the Unified Reich. We've got the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Mm. We have Mrs. Alito hoisting an upside down American flag because someone was mean to her or something that this didn't.
They called it the C word. It's totally natural. They called it the C word. I got to tell you, if somebody called Tyler the C word, I'd be very upset. I would have some words with them, and then I would come home and put up a Punisher flag to let people know that I was now part of the Oath Keeper. Wait, no. The last part I don't quite get. I do understand the story. I understand being mad.
You would put up a whatever, you know, where we go one, we go all flag.
I understand being mad about a neighbor calling my spouse a name to get it. Being upset, lashing out even. The next step of the story, there seems to be like a big jump from being mad at the neighbor from using bad language about my wife to coming home and turning my American flag upside down. There's a gap
to signal my solidarity with the insurrectionists and the people who say stop the steal. on a court case that was actively in front of my spouse, who sits on the highest court in the land and has very little accountability. Perhaps we care about whether or not Americans think that it is a good institution that they can trust.
And then in North Carolina, we have a Holocaust denier as a Republican nominee for governor.
Oh, guys.
Sarah,
let's go. So here's the thing. There's going to be a great episode on North Carolina coming out this Saturday for the focus group. Timmy and I did a good one last weekend with the youths. This North Carolina one is kind of depressing. Well, it depends on how you look at it. But here's the thing. So here's the thing. I'm going to drop a hot take on you guys to see what you think, but it is one of the most depressing hot takes that has occurred to me recently as I listen to voters.
I love this.
Okay, so rock with me for a second. So like I said, Mark Robinson is one with 65% of the vote from the base voters in the Republican Party. He went viral. He got elected lieutenant governor because he went viral giving a speech about kind of a from my cold dead hands gun speech. And so he was just widely loved. We did two groups. We did a group of sort of base Trump voters, and then we did Trump voters who didn't like Mark Robinson. And there's a lot of these Trump voters who don't like Mark Robinson because he's polling in the very low 40s. He is getting just walloped. And he's like in Doug Mastriano territory. Remember Doug Mastriano from Pennsylvania? Yep, he bussed people to January 6th. Okay, so Mark Robinson is polling is similar in North Carolina. And part of the reason it's creating this weird thing where Democrats are looking at him being like, oh, there's going to be this big drag on the ticket who has all these controversies, who's polling really low. And so maybe we want to play in North Carolina, which I got to tell you, I am against.
Terrible idea.
You need absolutely everything you can spend in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona, and Nebraska, too. That's it.
Can I have a counter to that?
Sure, sure.
There's a lot of money out there, a lot of rich people that want to save democracy. Might it not be worth somebody throwing $50 million in? I, as the person who thinks that this is probably not worth it, I think that most of this money is wasted. I'm just saying, if you're a person to whom $50 million makes no difference, which is only a small number of people, but there might be a concentric circle of people who don't care about $50 million and also do care about America not becoming a unified Reich under Donald Trump. Like, might it just as a backup option be worth it? I don't know.
Listen, in the absence of constrained resources, money is no object, by all means, play in North Carolina. North Carolina is routinely in the averages about +7. Like, whenever you see one of the swing states polled,
you're right.
It is the one that is the biggest, has the biggest margin out there. And they chased Dems chased North Carolina in 2020. And one of the reasons people chase North Carolina is that a lot of new people are moving in. It's got a big Black population. It's got a big tech sector now and college campuses. And it elects a lot of Dem governors. Anyway, they got another Josh, just like Josh Shapiro crushed Doug Mastriano. They've got a Josh Stein who's running against Mark Robinson. And what that tells us, though, Trump's up by 7. Robinson's polling in the low 40s. So that there are a lot of Josh Stein, Donald Trump voters. Okay?
Makes total sense.
Just like, and we spoke about this a little bit, you read a quote from one of these people in Wisconsin, there are a lot of Tanny Baldwin, Donald Trump voters. And this is, you are going to start hearing more about this as we get into this election cycle, because one of the weird trends that's starting to emerge is that actually a number of the Senate candidates that are very much perceived to be in danger this election cycle are actually polling way above Joe Biden and are kind of hanging in there and doing okay, in part because they are pre-Trump politicians themselves, right? They were elected, that you got your Sherrod Browns, you got your John Testers, they were elected pre-Trump, and they've got their own relationship with the voters that predates all the nutty stuff.
This has been a big windup on your darkest hot take.
I know.
Where you're going.
Okay. Here it is. So the fact that there's this big gap between Mark Robinson and Donald Trump. So we talked to a bunch of these voters who they were super down on Robinson. And we listened to them. And they were like, he says terrible things about LGBTQ people. He is an anti-Semite. He is extreme. They said all these things. And then when we asked about Trump, they were like, yeah, totally fine. All good. And my fear is that part of what's happening in the Republican Party is that they are putting up candidates, Herschel Walker, Kari Lake, Blake Masters, that are so insane that Donald Trump is starting to look, in relationship to them, more sane. Because they think Donald Trump, this is, goes back to something that Tim said that I think is one of the best political points about Donald Trump that anybody made back in the 70s, is that Trump is a cultural moderate. Voters do not think of him as extreme in the way that they think of Mark Robinson as being extreme, but that Mark Robinson's contrast is actually helping to normalize Trump, because in contrast to Mark Robinson, Trump looks more normal. That is something that has started to seep into me as I listen to these Senate races and I listen to this gap in voters who says Kari Lake is too extreme, but Donald Trump is just fine.
These people don't understand. Like the Donald Trump is more dangerous than Blake Masters. Okay, like that's, they don't, right, like their his reputation is misaligned from the reality. So this is my morning shot's going to be about this tomorrow. I think that the Democrats need to, and this is going to relate to our economy topic. And to me, I think the biggest opportunity out there is trying to turn Donald Trump into Ted Cruz. And they're doing this on abortion. But I know people get mad at me about immigration. They're like, they shouldn't touch immigration. I think that both immigration and guns are touchy. They're sensitive. You know, they're not, it's not clean. I get it. This is a little risky. But like the extreme positions that he's taken on these issues, I think are going to scare some of these people. Like that don't know better. Like there are some people that want to deport 50 million people. I get it. This is not, it's not like abortion where it's like an 80-20 thing. And there are some people that want 18-year-olds to be able to get guns without background checks. But like, I have not seen a very compelling, scary ad campaign that ties abortion, access to reproductive birth control, the fact that Donald Trump just said at the NRA that he wants to repeal the laws that put background checks on anyone under 21 buying a gun. He wants no background checks for teenagers buying guns. That's his actual position right now. And he wants to put 15 million people on buses. And I think that done right, like not making it about border security. Biden needs to be for border security. We can talk about immigration. But just taking his scariest positions that he's taken. Now he's all over the place and whatever. And just really grinding that home. That like, this is what's coming. The people around him are crazy. Like that, you know, you might have to include make some other people famous as part of this. Like, I think that is necessary right now. And I think that there are people that are really turned off by Trump's stated views on guns, abortion, and immigration, and maybe trans folks. I don't know. That gets even dicier. That like if you did it right, You have to do it right. You can't do Beto. This is risky. You can backfire, right? But if you did it right, I think this is an opportunity, and I think that they got to try to do it because I think that you're right, sir. I just think that there are voters out there that are like, Mark Robinson is a social conservative freak and Donald Trump is not. And like, you got to make them the same. And maybe that's not doable. I don't know. I just think that's worth a try compared to some of the, I think that lift is a lower lift than convincing people that inflation doesn't matter. But that's maybe a transition into our next topic.
So poll out this morning, Harris Guardian poll. Let me read these off. 55% of Americans believe that the economy is shrinking. It's been growing every quarter. 56% believe that we are currently in a recession. We haven't been in a recession since 2020. 49% believe that the S&P is down this year. It was up 24% in 2023. It's up 12% so far in 2024. And 49% believe that unemployment in America is at a 50-year high. You know what? Like, why bother? Why bother? Why even run an election?
Because?
Like, this is my... Like just
maybe the deep state. What you're saying is maybe the deep state should be taking their efforts more seriously.
No, what I'm saying is like these are the people and this is the world they want. Fine, let them have it.
Sort of.
We'll go to Portugal.
Okay. Well, no, we won't. And
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere either. I don't mean that.
Can I try to give you a positive spin on this?
Sure. I would love to see a positive spin on these numbers.
Great. They're wrong. The true numbers are good. They're wrong. And you can, like, this is where I don't know. I was looking at some numbers about how much the Biden team's been spending on ads. It's clearly not breaking through, right? But I will go back to whether it's my case around surrogates. This is a vibes problem. And, like, it would be one thing if the economy was in the shitter. You couldn't solve that problem that easily as a political matter. You can solve vibes.
Or is it just that they've decided they want Trump? I mean, we just sort of take it as written that, you know, they don't actually want Trump. They might default. What if they just want him? Because here's the thing. If they believed all these numbers, they wouldn't be in favor of all these other down ballot Democrats, right?
No. I've told you this a million times. That the Democrats in these focus groups also complain about prices. It has nothing to do with whether or not they'll vote for Joe Biden. It talks about how they feel about the real lived economy, right? And because there are some pain points close to home in grocery stores when things cost more, right? People are just, they're going to be price sensitive to that. However, the fact that the economy is good and thriving means that you can push into the fact that it is good. You know what else? You know what would be one thing, it's message discipline. One thing that you could say over and over again, every Democrat should say it every time they go on TV. The United States has the best recovered economy post-COVID than any other industrialized economy. We're not there yet, but we are doing better than everyone else in the world. You got to start putting that in people's heads.
That's a good line. Here's my thing. I'm just pulling this up. Like, 70% of Republicans think that we're in a recession. And these people are unreachable. And some of these numbers are going to be bad because it's just partisan response. And, you know, these people want Trump and it doesn't matter. They believe that the cities are racked with crime and that, you know, whatever. They don't know anything. Everything that they know is totally wrong. Nobody in the media watch business on the center right, you know, thinks that they need to hold to account all the false information that is out there on Fox and the crazier networks. And I don't know how that's fixable besides trying to get to these people on social media and try to get to these people otherwise. 49% of Democrats think that we're in a recession now. And so, like, that's what you got to focus on fixing.
Yeah.
And I keep saying this, like, you know, I don't want to me, undermine the importance of the bulwark, but like, we have to just be straight with people and honest about what's happening. Like, the bulwark type voter, like, there's more meat on that bone. Arvat's doing good work. There's more meat on that bone. We got to maximize our people. But a big reason why we got to maximize our people is because our people are on side, pretty much. All right. There are a few categories where they're not. You know, Israel, we've talked about, but mostly they're on side. Biden's problem is with Democratic coalition, young voters, black voters, Hispanic voters, mostly men, mostly non-college, not entirely. Like, you got to talk to these people using Sarah's message. You know, you got to talk to those groups about how we're recovering. We got a long way to go. We've got plans for you. You know, we're trying, you know, here's some other things we want to do in the second term. That's the challenge. It seems like an achievable challenge between now and November. If you're disciplined, if you're spending money in the right way, if you're doing it because you're speaking to people that's ears will conceivably be open to you. That doesn't necessarily deal with like the rot in our nation that of the political polarization and how there's a huge group of people that live in an alternate reality. But that's at least an achievable goal.
Your lips to God's ears, Tim. Your lips to God's ears. I will just say, so I wrote about Frank Rizzo today. He was the mayor of Philadelphia in the 1970s. He was a historically terrible mayor.
That should be some clickbait.
You know, you laugh. This is one of the best things I've written in weeks. It's a tremendous piece. Everybody should go to the Bulwark and read it. It's really good. Yeah. The argument is that Frank Rizzo was the first Trump. But one of the things that's interesting is, so Philadelphia was a hellhole under Frank Rizzo, one of the worst decades in the city's history. Crime went through the roof. Now, part of that is because crime was exploding everywhere in the 1970s, but there were some particular problems with Rizzo. But in addition to crime, they had a tremendous amount of police abuse and police misconduct. And so the end result is that Rizzo's voters, even after he left office, we'll talk about how great things were under Rizzo. And there was no crime under Rizzo when this simply wasn't true. Like we have the FBI crime stats. The crime went way up under Rizzo. But their perception was that crime was down because they also saw that the police were getting in trouble for like beating up black suspects and stuff. And so to them, that translates to crime is down. And that this is not like, this is just the human condition. And people are flawed and terrible, and you cannot count on them to be rational ever. We're all doomed.
Okay, great. That's kind of at also times.
Good show, long show.
Good show,
good show, long show.
I ended Jim Comey. If you want to be so excited to hear from Jim Comey, but it actually, I like your newsletter. It is not going to be clickbait, and people should really listen to it because it was really interesting. But he ended with Niebuhr, which is basically in the same place where you just ended, that people are terrible. I just have two just quick blind items for you. One's not a blind item. One's from Sebastian. Julie Kelly now writes for Real Clear Investigations. So we're talking about the degradation of our institutions, the website that everyone went to for, you know, unbiased numbers, et cetera, is now publishing a fabulous Donald Trump supporter.
And not as an op-ed columist, as an investigative reporter.
Investigative reporter, yeah. That's great stuff. My last blind item, I'm just going to leave you with this. I don't know where to put it. I can't write about it. I couldn't ask Jim Comey about it. So I'm just going to bring it up here. I received a text this morning, pretty credible, that the Kevin McCarthy defenestration had a lot to do with a lover's quarrel, and that there's a little more to the story than it seems, and that among the impeachers, there were some people that were not happy with Kevin McCarthy's personal practices when it came to women. So I don't know. What
meaning
we can do
like
with that?
He and Matt Gaetz were both fighting over the same 17-year-old girl? Stuff.
Yeah, good case. No, that there was maybe some mutual interest there. And that explains why Kevin has completely lost his mind and spent his post-speakership just trying to get revenge on people. Because there's a personal element to it. And maybe that's why he's out there saying that like Matt Gaetz is just doing coke and sleeping with 17-year-old girls. So you know, just to be clear, nobody said anything to me about underage, by the way. That was Kevin McCarthy's joke at Matt Gaetz's expense. Okay. Nobody said anything to me about underage. And, you know, just some scuttlebutt. This is kind of like your little hill scuttlebutt column. You know, we'll see where that takes us.
And on such matters of state goes the future of the Republic.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Good luck, America. Bye.